This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
This episode of the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick is brought to you by Mack Weldon. Guys, whatever you're wearing right now, Mack Weldon is better. Mack Weldon believes in smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. Mack Weldon will be the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershorts, hoodies, and sweatpants that you will ever wear. And Mack Weldon wants you to be comfortable, so if you don't like your first pair, you can keep it, and they will still refund you. No questions asked. They aren't just comfortable. Mack Weldon looks good, and it performs well, too. It's good for everyday life, going to work, going on dates, and working out. And all of their products are naturally antimicrobial, which means they eliminate odor. So go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off using promo code JJ. It's easy shopping, great customer service, good looking, super comfortable, underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, and hoodies. That's MackWeldon.com and 20% off using promo code JJ. Welcome to this week's episode of the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick. This week we are joined by Sacramento King, Matt Barnes. Let's get it.
Yahoo Sports presents the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your host, JJ Redick.
Welcome back to the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick. I'm going to be joined in a second by my former teammate, Matt Barnes. Before I get to him, I just want to say what a great teammate he is. He's always been a great friend. He's a guy that I've loved playing with. I think you'll see that in our conversation. Certain guys across the league have a reputation, and sometimes that reputation doesn't always equal reality. And I think Matt certainly fits that bill. He's one of the best guys I've ever been around. And seriously, loved playing with him. All right, without further ado, let's get to Matt. All right, we are now joined by this week's guest, one of my former teammates here in LA with the Clippers for two seasons, and one of my former teammates in Orlando back in 2010, Matt Barnes. Matt Barnes, thank you for coming on the show, man.
Man, thank you for having me. What's going on?
Not a whole lot. I got to be honest with you. I'm in the thick of things right now. I'm in the thick of things.
Baby life.
I wanted to ask you, what year was it when you guys had the twins?
2008. They were born November of 2008.
And you were in Phoenix?
Phoenix. Nightmare. Well, I mean, you know, being a father now, it's the best, most incredible experience you can ever have. But just the process of being a parent, the nightly cleanings, the nightly feedings, the being up all night, it's exhausting, man. So I know you're going through that with the other newborn right now.
I've been trying to explain to people the idea of a night nurse, and some people hire a night nurse, which we've done in the past, and we have a great night nurse. And so essentially she'll like be in the room with the baby while the baby sleeps. When the baby wakes up, every 2 or 3 hours, you know, she'll bring him up to us, and Chelsea will nurse, and then she takes him back down. Well, she's been on vacation, so for the last 2 weeks, I've been the night nurse.
You're the night
downstairs.
Nurse.
Yes. It's tough.
We had we had twins, you know, so my ex and I had a process of where, and she was breastfeeding both too, so that was an experience in itself, but they were maybe about 15 or 20 minutes apart when they would wake up, so we had a cool little routine where she would feed one, pass them to me, I'd burp them, put them to sleep, feed the other one, pass them to me, burp them, put them to sleep, and then we're good for 2 hours.
It's got to be a teamwork thing. It's got to be a teamwork thing. I'm like worried about Chelsea right now, because when we had Knox, it was one thing to have one kid and be in charge of one kid, but like logistically now, even just having two, I mean, any parent that listens to this podcast can probably attest to this, but having two logistically, like my son is not really old enough where you can say like, sit here for the next 45 minutes, and he doesn't like work with his mind. You know, he's on a one track mind. I'm gonna do whatever I want to do.
Is he two yet?
He just turned two. Yeah. And he's a sweet kid. He's a good listener.
He's a two year old little boy though. He's curious. He's rambunctious.
Yeah.
So we had two of those at the same time. You turn your head 1 second, and one's gone the other way, and one's gone that way. So it's fun though. Like I said, it's emotionally exhausting. It's draining. You're very tired, but there's nothing like being a parent. I mean, I love it.
So when you and I were teammates in Orlando, we were fortunate enough to play with Jason Williams, the white Jason Williams, Bubs.
One of my favorite humans ever.
And I've had a couple of the Clippers teammates on the podcast, and they refer to me as Bubs on the podcast. And so everybody always asks, why do people call you Bubs? And it comes from Jason Williams. Like, yes. He calls everyone Bubs.
Everybody's Bubs. I mean, it was we got on a hot streak there where we were calling everybody Bubs.
Yeah.
It's a catchy saying. It's funny. It makes people laugh when they hear it. And it somehow turned into your nickname.
I was trying to think the other day, why did I start calling people Bubs again? And it was, I didn't call anybody Bubs for like 2 years after Jason left the Magic.
Well, because I think you and I started doing that when we came to the Clippers.
Exactly.
Because that was the first time we'd really seen each other. So we were calling each other Bubs, and everyone else kind of picked up on it.
And now I'm like strictly Bubs. We were playing the Spurs. We were playing the Spurs 2 years ago in the playoffs. And I think it was like game 6 at San Antonio, and we were wrapping the game up, shooting free throws at the end. Tim Duncan, who at that point I'd competed against 9 years and had never spoken a word to me in my life, he looks at me on the free throw line. He's like, "Hey man, why does everyone call you Bubs?"
It's the name, man.
That is the thing.
I like it. Simple but good. Simple but effective.
I want to talk to you a little bit about your off season. Before I talk to you about that, I want to ask you today. You went to the Rams home opener. Football is back in LA. You took your boys. How was that experience?
It was great. You know, me being a football guy, really before I was a basketball guy, football at heart, it was just a great experience. And the fact that it's in LA, you know, LA has tremendous fans in a historical place like LA Coliseum. So it was just cool to be out there, 90,000 people. We were fortunate enough to stay on the field the whole game. So, you know, my kids got to see all their favorite players and really, you know, we basically sat right in the end zone. So it was fun, great experience. You know, the fans were still great for me. They don't hate me, but everyone was, it was a cool vibe. So it's good. I'm glad football's back in LA.
What celebrities were there today? Who did you spot today?
I saw Sierra, obviously, because of Russell. DeMar DeRozan was there. Who else? I saw Julius.
Was Bradley Cooper there? I felt like I saw him on TV.
I'm not sure. I saw Julius Randle. Okay. We got there kind of late, and like I said, we were on the sideline, so I kind of only saw who was nearest. But I'm sure. I mean, you got to think it's LA. You know what I mean? So I'm sure
the Rams invited a bunch of people out too.
So it was cool though. It was a really cool experience. You know, they invited the Olympians, the prior Olympians, the Hall of Fame guys that played for the Rams. So it was a really cool experience today, and the boys loved it.
A lot of people might not know this about Matt, but Matt was all world in high school at football. Now, didn't you? Were you all state? Didn't you? Yeah, you held some records as a wide receiver.
All state, all American. You know, led the nation in touchdowns. Had a record, I think, that just got broken a few years ago for 28 touchdowns in a season. But yeah, football was my first sport. I was highly recruited, but just, you know, chose basketball for the longevity. And UCLA didn't want me to play both. I actually went out my junior year to play spring ball, did well, was going to play football my junior year, and then kind of got blackballed out of, you won't start, we're going to have to change your scholarship type thing. If you're thinking about going to the NBA next year, it's probably not going to work. And I just stuck with basketball.
You grew up outside Sacramento. What was your team growing up then?
For football, it was the 49ers. Basketball, it was the Lakers. And then baseball, the A's and Giants.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick.
Peter King here, reminding you to subscribe and listen to all new and archived episodes of the MMQB Podcast with Peter King, as well as the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer and the 10 Things MMQB Podcast.
Matt, give me a minute to tell my listeners about Outdoor Voices. Outdoor Voices is the activewear apparel brand for the guy who believes he could definitely nail an NBA 3 first try, for the guy who catches a foul ball without dropping his beer, for the guy whose last mile is faster than his first mile, and who every 4 summers convinces himself his Olympic dreams aren't quite extinguished just yet. It's the activewear apparel for the guy who's still got it. They've sourced the best technical fabrics in the world to produce streamlined gear that's built to last, from the first sweat to the final whistle. Plus, it looks great without trying. It's called Technical Apparel for Recreation. Top-notch activewear made for everything from trotting the bases at Beer League softball to pushing the last miles of your next half marathon. You already get free domestic shipping and returns, but we'll sweeten the deal. So go to outdoorvoices.com/JJ, and Outdoor Voices will give you 15% off your first purchase with the coupon code JJ. That's outdoorvoices.com/JJ, and enter coupon code JJ at checkout for 15% off your new favorite high-quality activewear. All right, let's get back to my conversation with Matt.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick.
You're returning to Sacramento. You signed a two-year deal with them this summer. I know earlier in the summer I had spoken, this is before free agency, this is probably early May, right after our season ended. I had spoken with Doc about you and in hopes that we were going to bring you back. And I know you guys had communicated a little bit during free agency, but was there any sort of avenue that we could have got you back?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was an interesting situation. I mean, you know me well enough on and off the court to know that, you know, that my last season with you guys, when we beat the Spurs in the playoffs and lost at Houston, it was a bad year for me off the court from the standpoint that I was going through a divorce, you know. So I was really kind of, even though I held it together on the court, off the court I was a little on edge as far as just my moods being up and down. And Doc and I just happened to clash. You know what I mean? But the one thing I respected about Doc is, you know, he told us, if you want to say something, say it. And that's one thing that I respected about Doc, because even though we got mad at each other, it was really still an open line of communication, and we literally got mad at each other. He was mad at me, I was mad at him, you know. So then, you know, being traded to Memphis, I called him during the season, you know, just because I kind of felt bad how the way the things went down. You know, we had a good conversation. I apologized. He apologized. We, you know, pretty much buried the hatchet. And then we played you guys in here. We spoke again. So at the beginning of free agency, Doc and I talk, and he's just like, you know, I really feel you can still help this team. There's a spot here for you, and, you know, let's make this happen. So, you know, I'm ecstatic. Your team, that the Clippers we played on together, and then I'd probably say my Golden State team were probably the two closest teams on and off the court I've ever played with. And, you know, I really considered you guys family. You know, we all were literally at the same point in life. You know, everyone was having kids. We hung out on and off the court. It was a cool vibe. So when he said that, you know, I was very excited to be coming back to LA, to be close to my boys, which is the most important thing in the world to me. And then we were supposed to have dinner. The Tuesday that free agency started, we were supposed to have dinner. And so I'm just thinking, hey, you know, Memphis is obviously interested. The Clippers are very interested. Golden State and Sacramento. So those are the four teams I was really thinking about. And Doc and I are supposed to go to dinner on a Tuesday. And on Monday, I see that they sign Wesley Johnson. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, oh, okay. Going to be a little tight at the small four position, but I'm all for competition. You know, I'm telling myself that. But then after I kind of settle in, I'm like, damn. I'm fully thinking I'm coming back to the Clippers. I'm like, I'm not going back to the Clippers. So then I called Doc I shoot Doc a text later that night. Like, hey, are we, you know, I saw you sign Wesley. Congratulations. Are we still going on for dinner? And we talked. He's like, yeah, we can still do dinner, but, you know, we just ran out of money. And I'm thinking to myself, you ran out of money or did you give it to someone else? So I was kind of like, okay, you know, and then talking to my agent and, you know, kind of getting a read from Doc, I guess Doc felt like they didn't have enough money that I wanted too much money, which is, in my case, that's never, you know, I want to win.
Yeah. But you weren't willing necessarily to take the minimum.
I definitely wasn't going to take them, especially with the way the money was going up. And to be honest with you, I still feel like, you know, and this is not a knock to anyone out here listening, because I realize I'm blessed, but I still feel I'm underpaid at $6 million, especially the contracts the guys are getting today. You know, so I ended up taking $6 million from, or $6.5 million from Sacramento, and Wesley basically got $6.5 million from the Clippers. So to me, you know, save money. I mean,
right.
I could have been here, but
you
it
can
just
read,
didn't.
You can read between the
lines. Right. It just didn't work out.
The decision was made.
Right.
And that's not a knock on Wesley. Yeah. It's not a knock on Doc, but that's
it's
the
business.
Decision.
You know what I mean? At the end of the day, that's what people don't understand. Obviously, our hearts are in it because we're humans, but you have to realize and remember it at all times. This is business, you know, so you can't get too far into it with your heart.
Did spending a year away and being away from your boys, I'm not just saying because you were in Memphis, and I'm not knocking Memphis, but just being on the other side of the country, did that change your perspective about how good you had it here?
Oh, man. I mean, and I was someone that realized, you know, I've been blessed to play a lot of years in California in general on different teams, but in California. But like, everyone that knows me knows my kids come number one. And for me to be in Memphis and them to be in L.A., you know, where, you know, even though I was separated from them, living away from them in L.A., I still saw them pretty much every other day or every third day at the most. And being in Memphis and seeing them once a week, maybe for 3 days at a time, just, you know, because they have school, it was crushing. You know what I mean? It was just, you know, you being a father, imagine having to be away from your kids. And for my, you know, my boys were always in the locker room with Chris's son and Jamal's son. You know, they're kind of the life of our team. You know, so just to not have that energy around me, you know, I really went to Memphis all by myself. And it was just like, whew. But, you know, it was good. I found myself, you know what I mean? I really think I reflected a lot. You know, I looked back and just, you know, I feel like I came back from Memphis a better man. Thank you for that experience. You know, I'm glad I'm back in California now. But yeah, it was eye opening, but it was a good thing. You know, it's kind of a gift and a curse.
I know how important your boys are to you. You mentioned them being in the locker room with Chris's son, little Chris. And it's funny, when I first got to LA, I'd never seen that before, where the sons of the players would be in the locker room. And it's just after wins, obviously, but. After a couple months, like I said to Chelsea, like, we need to start having babies.
Got to work, man. Because they got to experience it, man.
I want, you know, and so this Knox came in the locker room, I think twice last year. Mm-hmm. He didn't come to a lot of games. We're pretty tight with his sleep schedule, but this will be the first year where, like, he'll have memories. Well, being in the locker room.
Right, I don't think that, you know, that's just an experience you can't explain. You can't tell someone, like, you have to experience that, and that's priceless. You know, to be around, and I think we take it for granted, but, you know, when we look back, I mean, our kids got to hang around the locker room with one of the best point guards ever, you know, one of the best power forwards ever, you know, with DeAndre, the freakiest athlete in the whole, you know what I mean? So it's just stuff we take for granted. We'll look back and say, like, you know, our kids will say, like, we grew up hanging out with these guys in the locker room, you know, and that's just something I love about basketball.
I teased Blake a little bit about this when he was on the podcast a few weeks ago, but he's had one experience in the NBA, and that experience has been playing in L.A.
Oh, man.
DJ's the same thing. He's had one experience, and it's been playing in L.A.
Man.
Your experience has been totally different.
Yes.
You know, I was doing a little bit of research, and I was trying to figure out all the teams you had played for. I'm going to go down the list of NBA teams. Clippers in 2004, then the Kings. A lot of people don't realize you played for the Knicks and the Sixers
in the same year.
Then you played for the Warriors, mm-hmm. the Suns, the Magic, the Lakers, the Clippers, the Grizzlies, and now the Kings. There was a little bit of a gap when I first looked it up on Basketball Reference. I was like, Matt started in the NBA in 2004, but I know that's not when he graduated college. Mm-hmm. So I had to look. Mm-hmm. And you played also for the Fayetteville Patriots.
D-League.
Which I knew was a D-League team, and the Long Beach Jam, which I had to look up the Long Beach Jam.
I don't even think they're around anymore.
I think they were the ABA when you played for them. And
Dennis Rodman played on that team with me for a second.
Yeah. Right. You've been everywhere. You played for a ton of teams.
Right.
I mean, are you appreciative of that experience?
Man, I think it shaped me as a man, definitely as a player. Just to have an appreciation, man. My journey has been crazy, as you just mentioned. You know, there was times I was playing in Juarez, Mexico. You know what I mean? Like,
what?
Like, where is that?
Wait, why are you playing Juarez, Mexico?
In the ABA.
Oh, geez.
Like, on a bus, you know, man, it was all bad. You know what I mean? So that's why when I play people, you know, he's out there being a thug. And I'm out there playing at 110% because I know where I came from. And I don't take any game for granted. You know what I mean? I may chill in practice sometimes, but when it's time to play, I don't take that for granted because I came from basically not like I'm not supposed to be here, man. I'm going to my 15th year. You know what I mean?
It's crazy.
That's crazy to think. You know, so when people see me out there, that's what you're getting. You're not getting, you know, an asshole with a chip. I don't know if I can cuss. Sorry about that. You know, someone with a chip on an asshole with a chip on his shoulder, or like I said, a thug or a dirty player. You're just getting someone that's playing, you know, extremely hard. Someone that loves his team and will do anything for his team, and is just a very passionate person.
Don't you think though that part of your persona? Because I always tell people this. Because you're a guy that, as a teammate, people ask me about, like, what's Matt like? Matt seems kind of out there on the court, and I think it's your, the persona you have on the court is very different from your persona off the court.
Right.
And to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but to me at least, your persona on the court is what has allowed you to survive.
No question.
It's sort of what has set you apart.
You hit it. Yeah, you hit it on the head right there. I mean, it's just the chip on my shoulder. You know, if I ever lost that, I wouldn't, like you said, I know that. I wouldn't be playing in the NBA still.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just, it's that edge, that tenacity, that fearlessness. The reputation I got early on was I was scratching and clawing to make a team. You know, to make a roster, you know, so I would do, and I did some dirty things that I'm not proud of, but like I said, it's either you or me, and you know what I mean? I'm trying to eat. So it was, you know, kill or be killed. That was my mentality until I actually got a chance to consistently play and show what I could really do. So that was a reputation I earned early on, and it really stuck with me my whole career, but it is what it is.
I think I remember you telling me a story about Mo Cheeks when you played for the Sixers. No, it's a good story to tell
story.
Because
yeah, no.
I do think when you're scrapping and clawing, and maybe when things don't happen as quickly as you want them to, and it happened for me too my first 2 years, you can get discouraged. Mm-hmm. And I want you to tell the Mo Cheeks story, one, because it's funny, but two, because that's sort of the world we live in where you're not necessarily getting positive encouragement from everyone around you in your organization.
No,
it's really, you're on your own a little bit.
It's a business. You're really on an island. And especially for me being a second round player that didn't initially make the NBA and then it bounced around. So getting to Mo Cheeks. So I was in Sacramento that season. So I was excited. I back home playing. And then the whole Chris Webber trade went down and I got thrown in there. So I went from Sac to, you know, where I was playing pretty consistent minutes going to Philly, that I just, the door shut. I didn't play at all. You know, so it was just I was mad, bitter for a minute, but I'm just like, you know, forget it. I'm just going to work on my game then. You know, so I hired, Chris Webber's shot coach. And I would just work before and after practice on shooting and just, like I said, really just try to improve my game. And he was just a dick, man. I don't even know any other word to explain it. He just wasn't cool, man. I really didn't like him. Like, I still to this day, like, I'll slap him in his face if he ever said anything to me type shit. You know what I mean? I just don't like him. But there was a situation in practice one time where it was a 3-on-2 transition. AI passes it to me on the wing. I shoot a flanker shot, 10-foot, 15-foot jump shot off and bank it in, goes in. He stops practice like, why the F are you shooting? Why are you shooting that? I'm just like, what? I'm confused. Like, I was wide open and I made it. That's not what you do. You pass the ball here or get off the court. And I'm like, huh? I was like, all right. You know, I didn't say nothing. You know, everyone's like, oh, shake it off. And then maybe I want to say 2 days later, I'm shooting after practice. So it's just me and the shooting coach all by ourselves in the gym, no one else in there. He walks by and says, what are you doing? I'm shooting. He's like, why? You're not going to get to shoot here. And I'm like, hold on, dude. So then we had maybe one more situation in practice, maybe a week or two later, where he says something and I just lost it, man. And I went after him and Chris Webber grabbed me. And it just was what it was, you know. So it was ironic. The next year I happened to end up going to Golden State. And that was a situation where I really, for the first time in my career, got to play.
Yeah.
And, you know, I told a few guys on the team the story. And I told Don Nelson, I was just like, I really don't like this guy. You know what I mean? He really dogged me last year. And I was playing really well for Golden State at this time. So, you know, now he's like, all right, I'm going to let you play. He's like, stay out of foul trouble. And I literally played probably the whole game. And I had like 26 or 28 points, hit like 7 threes. And the first couple shots I hit, Mo was talking shit like, oh, that was lucky. Like, and I'm just like, you're the head coach. Like, oh, you're lucky. So then after that, like I said, I got hot as could be. I didn't miss too many shots at all. And after every shot I hit, I would say, like, you know, I would add whatever I had to say to him. So it was kind of just back and forth. And after the game, I was talking to the guys, and they said, you had us on the bench rolling from the assistant coaches to the trainers. Like, because I got on fire to the point where Mo just sat down and was like, everyone's telling like, Mo, sit your ass down. Mo, stop talking to him. Like, I was really hot. And it was just, you know, just vindication for me.
Yeah,
like
right.
I said, you know, I worked hard and it paid off.
You're listening to The Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick.
And now a word from Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. Fast, powerful, and completely online,
Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. Hate searching through stacks of old files and paperwork? With Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button, helping you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. Even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone or tablet. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/JJ. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Matt, I have to tell my listeners about SeatGeek. As a lot of you may know, buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show you want to go to, and none of those other ticket sites want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek is always the first place I go to look for tickets to a game or concert. Everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I just used it the other day to look for tickets to see our new Los Angeles Rams. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, enter promo code JJ, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code JJ today. Now let's get back to Matt Barnes. There's certainly times where you remember those low moments, and to me at least, you need to have some people in your corner. Who I know you mentioned you loved playing with Chris Webber, mm-hmm. But really it was that Golden State team
right.
that kind of gave you the confidence that right. you could play and you could stick in the league.
Right. That was an interesting team, man. That was you know, myself and Baron Davis, which I'd known for a while, and then we made a midseason trade and got Steven Jackson and Al Harrington and just kind of made an amazing run. Went like 25 out of 28 games or 29 games to make the playoffs. So it was just a crazy, fast experience where we just really literally all became best friends. You know, it was me, Baron, Jason Richardson, Al Harrington, Steven Jackson, Monte Ellis, Miguel Petras. I mean, we had a talented team, man. It was just we were together on and off the court. You know, we had a good time off the court, and when the time became time to play, it was time to play. And I think we had that, like, that Detroit Piston bad boy mentality, and that was, you know, that's all I needed was a group of guys that played and thought like me.
I want to ask you, since that, you've been, for the most part, on sort of these two-year contracts where it's sort of a player option or a team option on the second year of the deal, and you've been on a bunch of teams since then. And you mentioned, you know, the boys coming in Phoenix, and so that's an added stress to it. I think the longest contract you've had in your career was a 3-year deal with the Clippers,
right?
And you got traded,
right?
You know, the year,
the
you know,
year.
Right, the summer before the third year. Why do you think that is? Why do you think, like, I assume that you think that there's a reason,
yeah,
because your talent level and sort of your contribution to a team
yeah.
would certainly merit, you know, I think
a long-term deal.
Well, not just a long-term deal, but sort of sticking
stability.
In one place.
Stability.
Yeah, that's
right.
the best way to describe
right.
it.
And it is, you know, when people, I look at it like I said, I have a reputation, you know, whether good or bad reputation is earned, and I earned a bad reputation. So that can play against me. I also know that early on, when it wasn't crazy money, but it was decent money, was being offered by teams that weren't very good. Like, to me,
yeah.
I always wanted to play on a team that was going to win. You know what I mean? And normally those teams don't have very much money, and they really are really set in their team and their ways. So I would always take less for an opportunity to win. You know, I've turned down a lot of money now that I'm older and think about it, like, you dumb, you know, what were you thinking?
Right.
You know what I mean? But I've turned down, you know, a significant amount of money from, you know, lesser teams to be on teams that had a chance to win a title, because I figured, you know, if I played on a team that won a championship, I know I'm going to contribute, and there will come my long-term deal. So I think my willingness to accept those small one-year deals early on once I became a consistent player and playing well, it's kind of like I think teams looked at him like, well, you know, he'll always take a deal later on. So, you know, why? We don't really have to commit because we know we can get him later on, you know. So it was just – it's a tough situation because, you know, you look at my numbers and my consistency, you know, no matter what team I played on, I've ended up either starting – almost every team ended up starting or, you know, being that sixth or seventh guy off the bench. But, I mean, like I said, I look at it like, man, I've got to do what I love for a living, so I'm not complaining.
You bring up an interesting point, though, because I do feel like that perception – that the league has of certain guys, and it's not based on anything specifically to you in terms of reputation, but more so about what guys are willing to take. It's almost like, well, once you take the minimum, or I can remember, you know, 3 years ago, San Antonio had the mid-level, and I really wanted to go to San Antonio. You know, this is before the Clippers kind of came in at the last minute, and my agent telling me, like, once you take the mid-level, you know, it's going to be hard to sort of get mm-hmm. more than that at the next contract. Because now teams know he'll take right. the mid-level. He'll take less. Mm-hmm. And once that perception exists, it's hard to break it.
I did that three times.
Yeah.
I did that three times.
Like three straight summers, right?
Right. Because I, you know, Golden State offered me $12 million, a $12 million deal. And I turned that, because that was the year we came off the playoffs. And I turned that down and did like a $4.5 million deal. My mom dies that year. Don't play well. So then I'm off to Phoenix, you know, for a one-year deal. Amari Stoudemire almost loses an eyeball. We don't make the playoffs. I don't end up sticking there. I'm off to Orlando where I play well, and then my contract, I get sold a dream. Contract doesn't come true. I'm out. Yeah. Kobe calls me. Of course I'm going to come to the Lakers. I come to the Lakers for, you know, some change, and it's just like bam, 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 bam. So I'm almost set in that minimum stage, and I'm just like, I know I'm not a minimum player by any means. If you look at my production, you know, what I do to a team and in the locker room, you know, and I think that's what a lot of people don't know is I'm, you know, I'm not the best player on the team, but I'm always a leader, one of the leaders, one of the voices of reason, you know, as you can attest to that, you know, really motivates a team.
Do you think, though, that, like, whether it's right or wrong, do you think that NBA players as a whole, do you think we sort of validate ourselves by our salaries? Or I think for the most part, guys do in terms of, like, I make this and he makes that. I should make more. I can't believe this guy got mm-hmm. that. That exists in the league, right?
I think early on I would hear a lot about that. You know what I mean? And I would especially be, and I'm just not that type of player to talk like that. Like, in my head, I'm thinking, of course, I know I've busted this dude's ass. I know I can lock him down. My average is better when I'm doing on deep. You know, I thought that, but it's not something I say. But
it's
not
necessarily healthy to
right.
be, dwell on
that. You can't
that.
Because you have to, you know, this the way we play every day. You know what I mean? So you can't get stuck in your little pout bubble. You know what I mean? So I definitely go at people, and when someone gets a big deal like this year, you know, Chandler Parsons is one of my friends, but, you know, he got a max deal at the team I was on, you know, so I'm coming for Chandler's ass this year. You know what I mean? That's just the way I think, but still off the court, we're cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's just, it's crazy, but I don't validate by what I make. I validate from the respect I get from the players.
Right.
You know what I mean? From, you know, from LeBron to Steph to whoever, you know, I've played with. There's always that respect, and that's how I validate my game and really just my career, because I've always been, you know, people know when I go out there what's going to go on, you know, what's going on, what I'm bringing.
I've said this multiple times. I don't know if I've said it on the podcast, but to people that have asked, whether media or friends, and, you know, people ask me, like, who's the best teammates that you've had, and your name always comes up. And I mean that. I mean, you really are one of my favorite teammates I've ever had. I was really upset when we traded you, because the second time around was even better than the first time around when we were in Orlando.
Right.
So, you know, I was upset about it. And, you know, I guess for me, in trying to process everything, you know, I wonder, and I want to get your perspective on this. Do you think that the sort of the off-court drama that has, I don't want to say followed you, because it hasn't followed you, but it's happened.
Right.
The off-court stuff has sort of affected your perception around the mm-hmm. league.
I think it has. I think really the biggest mistake I ever made was doing that stupid Basketball Wives show. You know, because it's just such a negative, untrue, you know, fantasy of what our lives are like. You know, our lives are nothing like that.
Right.
You know, but people live and swear by that reality TV, you know, and then to go through a public divorce with a Basketball Wife. And then what happened last summer, you know, with my ex hooking up with my teammate and now with my, you know, so it's just, and to me, to be honest with you, JJ, I'm always going to be me. So whether I'm in the NBA, a police officer, a doctor, a drug dealer, whatever my, I'm going to be me. So when stuff happens, I'm going to speak on it. You know, if you really push my buttons, I'm going to react on it. I don't think it makes me a bad person. It's just, I've been blessed to play in the NBA, but I'm a man, you know, before anything. Yeah. The NBA doesn't own me. You know, they own my image or whatever the part they do. They've given me an amazing opportunity, don't get me wrong. Right. But I'm, like I said, I'm still going to be me. I'm going to speak up on things. I may fly off the hook in certain situations like I did last summer, which I think is justified. And I think, you know, 90% of the men in the world feel me. But I definitely do. You never want to have your off-court drama outweigh your production on the court.
Sure. The distraction can't outweigh right. the talent, you can't. So to speak.
And I don't think
it hasn't.
Yeah, you, but, exactly. But it hasn't, yeah, but it's yeah. You know, but like I said, I think what saved me is my teammates know who I am. You know, so they may hear something in the media or see some on TMZ.
So when a team calls and says, "All right, Matt's a free agent," and they go talk to three or four guys that have played with him over the years, they're going to get good reports,
right?
Basically, yeah.
From the guys, right?
From the guys that he's played with.
But yeah, people sure. that don't know me, you yeah. know what I mean. I realize, like, I'm one of those guys you love to hate, and one of those guys you hate until I'm on your team type situation. Because, like I said, my teammate is my team is my family. I mean, you know how many times I got fined, you know, looking out for Blake and Chris with the Clippers, yeah. like a lot of money. You know what I mean? But I would do it again because, you know, that's my family. You know what I mean? And you're not gonna intimidate us. You may beat us, but you're not gonna punk us. And that's really my mentality.
Basketball wise, we have to talk about this for a second yeah. because it wasn't on my list of things to talk about, but yeah. you brought it up. Yeah. I have a major problem with that show. One of the things I've done on this podcast is I've tried to debunk a lot of the myths around professional athletes, mm-hmm. and I feel like that show just perpetuated
it set us back.
So many false notions
of
athletes.
None of it is true, man. Yeah. Nothing you see on these reality TV. I mean, not even basketball wise, but it's all staged. It's they say it's unscripted. It's not. It's everything is scripted. Everything right. is set up. And it's such a negative.
Shawnee reached out to Chelsea.
Oh, please.
When we were in Orlando.
They wanted
her to be on the show.
Because I was with Shaq in Phoenix when Shaq yeah. brought it to me at practice. Like, yeah. yo, Shawnee wants to do a show. Will you let Gloria be on? I'm like, hell no. What are you talking about? Like, we had just had the kids and everything.
I think they wanted Chelsea to be the token white girl.
Yeah, I'm glad she didn't fall for it. But these shows just aren't, there's nothing real about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like I said, me at the time being the only active NBA player in the game, you know, even though Gloria didn't really act out on it, she was actually the voice of reason and the mellow one. It was just, you know, you people think that's how we live, like how the type of people we don't even know them chicks. Like, yeah. They wouldn't be allowed in my house if they wasn't filming. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's just, it was a horrible decision on my part.
I'm glad you can now admit that it was a mistake.
Hell no. I admitted it once I started. I mean, we were in Orlando when we first started filming, and that's yeah. when Tiger Woods was going through all that stuff.
Yeah.
So the first time and last time they filmed me, because this is the only show I did, so, you know, what do you think about Tiger? And I'm like, whoa, where'd this come from?
Right,
like, do you
right.
hang out with Tiger? Like, I'm just like, huh? What do you and your teammates do on the road? And then they went to like a little cut, and I took my mic off, like, I'm done. Like, this isn't... Gloria film and y'all gotta go.
Chelsea and I, we like to go to bed around 8:30 or 9 o'clock. This is like even before we had kids. We've
Why
been
are
in
you
LA.
Guys I'm not such squares.
We've been in LA for 3 years. I don't think I've been into a nightclub in LA since I've been here. And that's probably sad to say that.
No,
but
I'm gonna get you
tonight.
Out of time.
Tonight it's like it's 9:30 at night. We're at your place. You're taking care of your boys. Like, this is not the lifestyle that sort of gets portrayed on, like, Ballers, even on Basketball Wives.
It's not
the lifestyle.
Like,
there are moments. Don't get
yeah.
me wrong.
Oh no, we have
there
great
moments.
We have great lives.
Yeah, there
know,
are moments
I don't
of
think
fun.
It's,
don't
it's
get
to
me wrong.
The extreme. I think what they're portraying, and this is not a knock on anyone, I think that's more of like entertainers, like rappers, and they have, you know, the wild and a bunch of girls around and the crazy, you know what I mean? Like, most, like, to be honest, most of us, you know, are either have serious girlfriends or wives or kids, or, you know, we're normal. You know, I'm someone that does my own grocery shopping. You know, I go to the dry cleaner.
Right.
I sit in restaurant. You know, I'm not
I did the dishes before I came over here.
No, I mean, you told me, you're like, hey, I'll be over there in 30 minutes. I got to put my son. Like, we're regular people. Yeah. You know what I mean? We're just on TV.
Right.
You know, so I just think it's just such a misconception of who we are and what our lifestyles are.
Well, now, too, with social media, which is it's really dangerous almost to be out there in the streets.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And
especially with me after being on that TV show and then the run-in.
I mean, I would assume that if you go somewhere in LA, if you're in Hollywood or wherever, it's almost like you have to keep your head on a swivel.
Be ready. No, I mean, it's just, and this is not to sound conceited or to make myself seem more than what I am, but just the things I've done off the court, some good, some bad. You know, the women I've been with, like, that stuff is, that's LA-type stuff. Even though that's not me, it's LA-type stuff. So I'm, you know, when I go and do places, there's always people taking pictures of me and asking to take pictures, which is a blessing. It comes with the territory. But like you said, you always have to be aware of what's going on. You know, and nightclubs and restaurants and, you know, in my situation, it's hard for me. I can't really even go out with a girl unless she's my chick, because I haven't been photographed with anybody. You know what I mean? So if I take someone to a nice dinner in Hollywood, no matter who it is, that's my next girlfriend. That's the person that's replacing Gloria. Or it's so far-fetched. And even though it could be no truth to it, once it's out, it's out.
Bring it full circle. If you had done Basketball Wives or not done Basketball Wives, do you think that this would be going on to this day, like now 7 years later?
I don't think so. You know what I mean? And Basketball Wives didn't help at all. Yeah. You know what I mean? It didn't help.
I'm asking because it's interesting to me, because what you're saying is you're not bragging or you're not being conceited. Like it's your reality in this town.
Right.
It's your reality in this town.
Right.
But it's not necessarily that your lifestyle is any different than anyone else's, but
mm-mm.
It seems like there's more sort of TMZ love
your
way.
Yeah, shock value, I think. You know what I mean? Because I've done everything from, you know, which doesn't really get too much publicity, but, you know, my charity, my foundation weekend, so I get a little bit of love with that. But then just the unfortunate stuff that's happened. You know, I've been in a fight. I've got a divorce. You know, I was in a scandal with Rihanna, allegedly. You know what I mean? So there's just a lot of stuff that goes up and down that's out there about me that just be like, oh, you don't really know what you're going to get with Matt, because they really don't know me, but they don't know what they're going to get. So they're kind of always keeping a camera on me just to see.
Right.
So
the other thing with social media, you've always been pretty outspoken on your social media accounts. You know, your Instagram account, you're definitely not afraid to sort of speak your mind. And in terms of like a big picture thing, like I think with anyone really, but like with athletes, it's like if you make the decision to have a social media account and you make the decision to be active on that account,
you got to take what comes with
it. Exactly. Like it's inherent with the territory. Like if I'm going to be active, if I'm going to post things on social media, good, bad, controversial, vanilla, whatever, I'm going to get heat for it.
No question. And I think there's just us being public figures, people either love us or hate us, they're going to criticize us one way or the other. But there's just a lot of unhappy. I think that social media has brought out just a lot of unhappy people. I think that a lot of people are so extra on social media. You know, they're posting these houses and these cars that they don't own but act like they own. You know what I mean? So everyone is trying to keep up with the Joneses, that people get jealous. But, you know, people's lives aren't what they claim to be. You know, I see these guys and girls posting crazy, amazing stuff, and I hang out with them like, yo, where's that thing you posted on Instagram? Oh, that was my homeboy's car. I just rented. You know what I mean? So it's just like people are trying to keep up, and at some point some people can't keep up, so then they're going to be mad. So then when it comes to us, like you said, you either love us or hate us for what we do, you're going to get a lot of negative just because people aren't happy with their own lives, so they're going to be negative towards us. I just don't like when they talk about my kids.
Right.
That's sort of
out of bounds.
Like they pay me a lot of money for you to talk about me. You know, you can talk about me all you want. Sometimes I'm going to talk back to you. But when people talk about the kids, that's what really, that bothers me.
I've learned to, for the most part, ignore the trolls, because there are a lot of them. But there's two things to what you bring up. Number one is the lifestyle part of social media, which I always find really interesting. And I think it has made an entire generation, like the millennial generation, a very unhappy generation.
Oh, man.
Because we all think that everyone around us has more than us.
Doing better.
And so it's like we're all just like, oh, I need more. I got to have more. And it's...
Right.
it's like there's no contentment in that. There will never be contentment in things or experiences. Like, it's just, to me, it's about people. So that's one part of it. The other part of that is, like, you're right. People are angry. I think America is angry. It's why people support Donald Trump,
right,
man.
It's crazy.
And you see that manifested on social media.
It's sad because, I mean, most of the time, and I even, it's not just towards me. When I look at other people's pages and I see other people talking crazy, I'm just like why?
No, it's not just you. It's,
right.
It's everyone. I mean,
I didn't mean it like that. Of course, yeah, everyone gets talked, yeah, but I'm talking about, like, I'll feel bad when I'm going, you know, when I'll go on your page and people are talking bad. I'm just like, why? Like, you don't even know JJ.
You always throw in like a funny little comment. Right. Like, I'll be like, yeah, I'll scroll through. Sometimes I'll be like on comment 342 and it'll be M. Barnes.
Yeah,
nine.
I'll be slick of the, yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm a regular person, man. I comment on my friends' pictures. Right, I comment on hot girls' pictures sometimes. Right. I'll comment on the blog. You know, I'm fun, man. I'm not a robot. I'm not a puppet. You know what I mean? If I like something, I think something's funny, I'm a laugh. If I think something is crazy, I'm going to say something to you. You know what I mean? It's just, social media is crazy, but I think one good thing from social media, it's got to allow me to show the other side, because people only get that basketball wife perception of me that not true, and then they only get 2 hours of me on the court. So from that, they base their whole opinion on me, when that's such, you know, a small part of my life. You know, you know me better than you. My kids are my life, you know. So I think through social media, it's got to show me, be a father, be a regular person. I'm not crazy, you know what I mean?
Right.
I have some crazy tendencies, but I'm not, you know, I'm a dad. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I was, when the kids were babies, I was changing two shitty diapers and bathing them and feeding them and being normal, you know, and running a foundation and having successful businesses. So I think Instagram is a gift and a curse. You know what I mean? You got to be careful using it, but it's allowed me to show my, I guess, my softer side, so to speak.
Before I let you go, I got to ask you about this sort of ongoing national conversation about racism, but specifically about the oppression of African Americans, right, and sort of the social injustice that some police officers have perpetrated against African Americans. Do you have any plans to, like, is that in your thought,
yes,
process right,
absolutely,
now, in terms of protesting or just making a stand in some sort of way?
Me being biracial, like, this really touches me, because growing up, I faced a lot of racism. I mean, even though I'm Italian and black, I consider myself a black man from the standpoint that I've faced so much racism in my life. You know, my high school was vandalized by the KKK because of a situation that went down in high school. I've been called nigger more times than I can remember, you know. So I look at myself as a black man. So when I see all this social injustice, I see these cops killing, and I'm sure black cops have killed white people. I'm not naive to, you know, whether it accident, purpose, whatever it may be, it's happened. But for some reason, all we're seeing is white cops kill black people. You know what I mean? So it's just like, something's got
to
give.
It's also naive of us to think that this hasn't been going on. I mean,
I think Will Smith said that, you know, this is nothing new. We just can film it now.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I just, it's
to me,
tough.
It's not that, I would say it's not that race relations have declined or improved. They're the same.
We're just
They're
more
just
aware.
More, yeah, there's
more
aware
of it now. We're
and
more aware
I think
of
it's
it.
A good, in a way, not right. No killing is good.
No, never.
But the conversation that people are having now is
it's good. It's finally being discussed, because no matter what you say, there's racism. There's always going to be racism, but I think we just have to come to a common ground. These police officers need to be held accountable, man. They can't keep getting acquitted for killing these people. You know, when it's not only blacks, they're, you know, minorities in general. You know, so it's just, they have to be held accountable. Colin Kaepernick, I love the stance he's taken. You know, I don't agree with sitting down for the flag, even though there's been a lot of, you know, if you look up, you know, the national anthem, and, you know, there's a lot of verbiage on slavery and stuff in there that people weren't really aware of. I don't necessarily agree with him sitting down, but I definitely agree with what he's doing. Him using his voice, donating his money, getting back in the community. That's all stuff I've done. I think it's great. like I said, the flag situation is a touchy situation. I really don't, you know, I don't really agree with that. But like, yeah, I said, I think as athletes and celebrities, we need to use our platform. And if you're passionate enough to be able to believe in it and have some knowledge in it, you should speak up on it. And you know me, that's something I post these killings and these acquittals and, you know, have conversations. And I really see how some fans are really get bothered by it. You know what I mean? And you're a basketball. Don't talk politics. Right. You're a basketball. I'm like, no, I'm a human. I'm a human being. Right. You know what I mean? So
you have every right to talk politics or whatever you want to talk about.
Right.
The anthem thing, I think, is going to be a little touchy subject with the NBA.
Right.
And I'll explain why. First of all, I think our league is the most progressive league in terms of, from a social standpoint and social issues. You saw the NBA pull the All-Star game.
Right.
Out of Charlotte because of North Carolina's HB2 law.
And then our own team, too.
Yeah, you know, with Sterling. The Sterling situation, sure. But our league has pretty much mandated for the last, I don't know, 10 years.
I think we lead the way.
That during the anthem, you have to be in uniform. Everybody's wearing the same thing. You can't even be dancing. You can't be moving in a weird way.
They don't want you chewing gum. They told me to take the gum out of your mouth.
Didn't
it's
you
not
get warned about being fined because you were using the bathroom? No,
yeah,
who was using the bathroom?
Me.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I was using the bathroom. They said, you can't miss the anthem. I'm like, man, I had to pee. So next time you'll be fine. I said, oh, okay.
So you know, Amon Shepherd in a rap song the other day said he's going to definitely kneel during the anthem. So maybe that's one guy. But there's going to be guys that do stuff, whether they raise a fist or kneel or whatever they do. I wonder how the league's going to handle that.
I think the league should just let it be. I mean, if it's a quiet protest, you know what I mean? And I think the NFL, like, it's going to leave. We still have, you know, another month and a half, but it's interesting to see, like you say, week by week, more people are doing something. You know, we were just at the Rams game today, and we were there for the anthem, and we were literally standing on the sideline. And a few Rams players put their fist up. You know what I mean? And I kind of looked around. As soon as I seen it, obviously, it gave me chills. It's just like, you know, this is really something in professional sports that is going to be something to watch now. You know, and people are excited to see the national anthem now just to kind of see what's going on, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, so I think if it's a silent protest, I think the NBA should leave it alone. But, you know, the NBA doesn't really like to leave anything alone. especially me. No, playing.
Don't do anything, please. All right. Well, I appreciate the time, Matt, and wish you best of luck. I know we'll see you guys a ton this season, both in the preseason and the regular season.
Yeah.
All right, bud.
Thank you for having me. You got your name on these microphones, Bob. You're going places. I'm happy for you, man.
I have my. I'll post a picture on Twitter, but I have my own mic flags, digital media,
nice.
Vertical podcast, Yahoo Sports with JJ Redick.
Next summer, talk to the bosses. I want to come co-host with you.
All right. Sounds good.
Sounds good. All right. Have a good one, bro.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick. I'd like to thank today's guest, Bubs, a.k.a. Matt Barnes. Remember to subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes wherever you listen to the podcast. And be sure to subscribe to the Vertical Podcast with Woj and the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and you can now hear the Vertical Podcast Network every weekday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, on Sirius XM Channel 214, XM Channel 203, and on the Sirius XM app on Channel 967. My podcast airs on Sirius XM every Monday and Thursday, the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix every Tuesday, and the Vertical Podcast with Woj every Wednesday and Friday. As always, you can tweet me at JJ Redick for any questions and comments. I love hearing from you guys. I'd also like to thank our sponsors, Mack Weldon, Outdoor Voices, and SeatGeek. Be sure to support them the way they support us here at the Vertical Podcast. We'll catch you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.